You are listening to episode number 157 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another exciting episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. As always, and forever will be, I am your host, Iggy, a.k.a. Ben. Joining me tonight, the man who's still buried in snow, Mr. Brian Powers.
Freezing my ass off over here.
And the man who is also freezing his ass off, Mr. Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
It's cold over here.
And, of course, the man... who is a resident of the state of Oklahoma, therefore sucks, Mr. Jonathan Courtright.
That's the best you've got for John? Seriously?
Whoa. Well, Oklahoma sucks. It's a state. I'm from Texas. That's by law. I have to say that.
Oh, I love you too, buddy.
You can go to jail for 10 years if you don't say that every 5 minutes.
Look, Oklahoma is
okay. Your
Cheerios
on me, all right, bro.
So there you go. Yeah.
Nobody wanted Oklahoma. They put all the Indians. They put all the Indians there. Only one of the white people wanted to move there. Then they got it. Then they wanted it. They didn't want it before. All right.
Hey. Well, you got that right, yeah.
Anyways, nobody. Sorry, Oklahoma. You guys shouldn't have an NBA franchise. I'm sorry.
Oh, fuck you,
man. You guys should. It's like, let's Sacramento, Los Angeles, New York City, Miami, Oklahoma City. Take that first.
Seattle, San Francisco, to
I'd rather go to an NBA game in Seattle than San Francisco. I don't know what you're thinking. I'm too young for that, apparently.
It's Huey Lewis in the news.
I never listened to him.
The heart of rock and roll.
Go to sleep, old man.
Exactly. You never saw Back to the Future?
Go to sleep, old man. All right. My class. So, banter aside, we are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. We are a Marvel podcast dedicated to all things Marvel. That includes comics, TV, video games, animation, even though there's been a little bit of animation in the video game department. But hey, apparently some news will come later this year. Who knows? But let's get right
into it. Wait a minute, hold on. About animation, hasn't anybody been watching Hulk and the Agents of Smash?
I love that show. You know I love that show.
And what about Avengers Assemble?
That I need to watch, but it's not on Netflix yet, so I have to wait.
We need probably need to ask A-Train for that, because I know he watches both.
Well, I know where at least the animated stuff's going to be less cartoony, less kiddie, so that's always a good thing. Let us have the direct-to-DVD stuff. So, that being said, we got ourselves a new ongoing coming out this May with a Resident Bruce Lee ripoff. I mean, certain Quick.
Just because he's wearing an outfit reminiscent of Bruce Lee in the cover doesn't mean shit.
Quick, Taser, what's Bruce Lee's favorite drink?
I know.
What is it?
I don't know.
Ta-da!
Oh, God.
Have you never heard that for real?
Honestly, no.
Wow.
No, I have not.
That joke got me so many phone numbers in junior high school. I would not even you would not even believe me.
That was your key to friendship.
That was the icebreaker for me. It was just like, okay, I'm gonna do another one. All right.
That's Texas. That's all I can say.
Probably. One of my shot put teammates when I used to play shot put. When I used to perform, whatever you call it, in shot put in junior high school and high school. The other one is, you guys know what Little Caesars is, right? Little Caesars?
The pizza.
The pizza place. Okay, just want to make sure. I met some people, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
All right. They don't have a Little Caesars here.
Okay. How do you cut Mexican pizza? Anybody?
I'm scared to ask.
With Little Caesars.
Nobody. No. Actually, I like that one.
Use it. Everybody, I have yet to meet a single person to not at least giggle at that, and it's hilarious. Tell your friends.
I like that one.
It's funny. Now, if they don't know what Little Caesars is, well, then they don't live in America. All right, so let's get right into it. Deadly Hangs of Kung Fu. Brian, give us the details.
All right. Yes. Our resident martial artist, Shang-Chi, has been awarded his ongoing by some stroke of, I don't know if you'd call it luck.
It's luck.
Whatever. Written by Mike Benson and is going to be illustrated by, I'm going to butcher this, Tan Eng Huat.
Who's it?
He's the current artist on X-Men Legacy, and Mike Benson previously wrote Deadpool Pulp, so if that gives you any indication of what's going down. But it looks as if Shang-Chi is headed to Fokio London Town for some, he's paying his respects, and then apparently Kung Fu happens.
So it's Shanghai Knights 2, it's Shanghai Knights high, in 2, right? Is that what this is?
Essentially, yeah.
That's horrible. Mike Benson, if you're listening to this, I doubt you are, but that's horrible. That movie was terrible. I hope your comic won't be that bad. Well, Taser, man. I'm going to give you honorary first goes because I know you love the Kung Fu. You love the martial arts. You grew up with that. I didn't nearly as much. I don't have reverence for Bruce Lee or Shang-Chi, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, as much as you do.
Die.
So I just didn't grow up with it. He wasn't a character I didn't know about. Sue me.
Die.
I'd much rather fight as Fei Long if I was given the choice. Taser, speak away on the idea of a new Deadly Hands of Kung Fu coming out.
I seriously doubt. Well, you know what? I haven't read issue the first, so I can't really say that. But I saw a little bit of the. I saw that cover, and I don't know. It just looked a little too clean for me. The old book was, you know, I realize this isn't going to be politically correct or anything, but it was nice and dark, and he was going up against his dad, and it looked Chinese-y, you know? I mean, they really played up him being Asian. Here, I mean, you know, Shang-Chi, he's got, you know, kind of the nice groomed hair, and he's got the pseudo sports suit with sneakers and... I don't know, man. I don't know. I'll look at it when it comes out, but something's just kind of giving me the skeevies about it. And the setting doesn't sound too bad. You know, him going to, what was it, England to do whatever. Fine. You can get butt-kicking action anywhere. But... yeah, you know, I hope they don't play him as a superhero, though, because that I don't enjoy Shang-Chi like that. Like, him in the Avengers is just kind of like, huh?
The hell are you doing?
He's more an adventurer rather than superhero, you know? So that's why him in that book didn't keep me, even though I do like Shang-Chi. I enjoy his more Wolverine-ish adventures when he's over here and he's trying to do something, and then stuff happens. He gets involved, and, you know, punches need to be thrown. I don't know. I'll look at the first issue when it comes out. But I'm not a fan of the look that they're giving him. Hopefully I'll come to like it and I can, you know, get into the book and enjoy it that way. But other than that, I can just say I'll give it my standard 3-issue test. If it doesn't pass it, I gotta bail.
All right, well, at least you're giving it a fair chance. Jonathan, you're also from the same ilk of martial arts. Jonathan, so racism aside, what do you think about the idea of...
I'm kind of like Taser. I'll have to give it a chance. I'll give it the 3-issue chance. I mean, I might be more into it. It's just Shang-Chi's never been one of my favorite characters, depending on how they do him, you know, with the unintended racism in there, you know, or they always like to try to make him really, really like Bruce Lee. And I'm just like, you know, there are other martial artists out there that's not just Bruce Lee, but, you know, you take what you get. You
yeah,
know?
Jet Li.
If they
right?
do them right, we got Jet Li, we got Quentin.
Jackie Chan?
Every other kind of Lee. Jackie Chan, Andy Lau. Well, not Andy Lau so much, but Gordon Liu. Just Donnie Yen.
I have no idea.
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of. I'll recommend. Talk to Taser. He'll know what I'm talking about. He'll recommend some movies. I'll probably give it a try and see how it goes. But I'm just like Marvel's doing the spaghetti throwing against the wall and see what sticks lately on their giving people titles. And I just hope that this one actually sticks, because when Shang-Chi is done right, he's a pretty cool character, and he can stand toe to toe with some of the heavy hitters in the, Marvel U when he's done right. So that's all I can really say. But otherwise, I'll just say it's a wait and see.
All right. So. All right. Here's, I have nothing against Shang-Chi. I have no personal connection with the character. Didn't even, you know, I remember the first time I saw Shang-Chi because he was a part of the Heroes for Hire team book that came out of Civil War, or launched it with this. I want to know what happened to her, this tarantula character, this sexy female with black hair, with red streaks, and had daddy issues. I'm like, where did she go? Seriously, if you find out what happened to that character, please, I will get you a free comic. Her name was Tarantula. But it was when they relaunched the book, and he was one of the members. I don't remember him doing much in the series, so there's that. But here's my concern. When I think of martial artists and just fight scenes in general involving fists and just general body parts, it's usually fast, fluid, and I'm thinking of modern stuff. I haven't really delved into like 70s kung fu action, just nothing, never really watched it, and if I did, I was too young to remember it. It's the fluid action. It's that rhythm, that sort of dance-esque motif that I see with it. And that works when I'm watching a movie, but anytime I try to see that within a comic, I can only speak for me personally, I always get bored a little bit because the images are static, and I understand, and that's the medium that they're working with. So it has to take a certain artist for me to capture that visual flair that a martial arts fight or a fighter who uses martial arts, for me to not necessarily believe it, but for me to see it thoroughly and feel like it flows perfectly. Not saying that the book should be filled with martial arts, but when those sequences are done, it should flow, and most of the time that's not the case. Most superhero fights are general brawls with very few counters. It's pretty much, I grab you, I throw you, I hit you with beam, you jump here. There's not a lot of perceived choreographed fighting where I hit you high up, you're going to block high with your forearm. There's not a lot of that. There just isn't. So that sense, when it does do that, it's very stiff, it's very static, unless you put a lot of panels in the page, in which case, most cases, it feels crowded. So that's the only concern I had. I probably won't try it out just because I'm reading a lot of other books, but hey, if that week is light, I'll probably try it, you know? Nothing wrong with trying something new. So that's all I gotta say. Be right.
I liked Deadpool Pulp, so there's that going for me, I guess. As far as Shang-Chi goes, I prefer the white guy who does kung fu much better.
Iron Fist?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Because he's all about the fisting, baby.
Oh,
you know it. Well, Shang-Chi does have deadly hands, so I guess we'll see where that takes. That being said, I'm intrigued. I'll probably glance the first issue, but unless I see something in the book that really jumps out at me, it's not an immediate buy for me. It's more like, if I have the spare money, maybe I'll pick it up. But I've never been one for the niche of old 70s kung fu, so to see this guy continually getting appearances both in the Heroes for Hire post-Civil War and the most recent Heroes for Hire, also in, I believe he was in Secret Avengers,
He's in Avengers right now.
He's in mainstream Avengers right now?
Yeah, he's in Avengers.
He was in Secret Avengers.
Oh. Well, I guess it works. I mean, they have to have some kung fu guy. I mean, everyone else has Iron Fist. That's kind of like, we need another kung fu guy. But, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'll check it out if I got the time and the money. So, that's really all I have to say on the matter.
Seriously, does anybody remember Tarantula from that Heroes for Hire book that came out of Civil War that didn't last too long? Does anybody know what happened to her? Seriously.
Who?
Her name was Tarantula. I think she was a new character. I'm not sure. I could be wrong, but I loved her look, and I miss her.
I believe.
And she was from what, Marvel?
But after that, I didn't see her anywhere.
Somebody needs to bring her back. That and Ares God of War, because I missed that son of a bitch. All right.
He's in Elysium or something.
He's been gone since 2008. That's a good decent amount of time.
Yeah, he got torn apart too.
Yeah, I know.
He got torn apart.
Yeah, so that's who I want this year. I want Tarantula and Ares God of War back. All right. So that's enough. So let's go on to the next bit of news. B-Vry, take it away.
Oh, Shang-Chi's not the only one who gets his own series. Cyclops is getting a series, but not the one you're thinking of, folks. No, the time-displaced youngin' from 1960-something will be getting his own series written by none other than Greg Rucka himself. And we'll reportedly get some more interactions with him and his Father Corsair as Cyclops goes cosmic, which is probably one of the least overwhelming things that could possibly be said about anything, because, Cyclops. But hey, he's young and he's not his older self and he's doing stuff.
This could be the opportunity to become Kirk and basically bang space aliens.
Oh, God.
And
right.
Cyclops doesn't have the air of not giving a fuck necessary to portray a Kirk,
You never know. Being around his dad, he might. He actually has his dad around. You never know.
His dad's going to score more than
more or less like pushing him in the opposite direction. I don't want to be like him.
And considering Gene has pretty much zeroed him away, for the most part.
Gene is a see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised X-23 is not on this book as well. Maybe she'll join him along because those two want to bump sheets already. All right.
I would approve of that.
Well, they've already dropped hints that something might happen. So
approve of that if only just to see Cyclops in bed with Wolverine.
Well, you can already see that just by going to DeviantArt.
Oh, are we talking about the X-23 Cyclops thing? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But the weird thing is the fact that Brian, you and I are a fan of Greg Rucka. We're huge fans.
Kinda.
Well, I am, at least. I'm a super fan of his.
I enjoy Rucka's work. I don't hate him, so.
I love his work. Like, I'm just... Anyways, he would be the last guy I would think to be on this. I'm like... It's kind of those, like... I think he wants to stretch his writing muscles a bit to write something different. Which is nothing wrong with that, but I'm like, huh. That's interesting. So I'll try it based on that alone. Based on his name alone, I'll try it. The artist, though... I think somebody on the GL boards posted and this could completely different to how he does when it comes to panel work, but that poster of him doing like the 90s X-Men, that was fucking gorgeous. So if it's anything like that, but translated to sequential panels, we got something here. The only other thing I have is, why is this an ongoing? I mean, sure.
Because Cyclops is interesting.
Sure, I mean, it probably won't last too long. Just name it either sales or just Marvel Now, and then, you know, oh, the book's over, so let's end. So I wouldn't doubt that this book doesn't have a life cycle. But it's just like, why? This to me just screams 4-issue miniseries, or maybe 5 at the most. But so I'm curious to see on this first issue on what's going to make it an ongoing, you know, outside of Scott and his dad going, Scott with the, what are they called? Corsairs group.
Starjammers.
The Starjammers, you know, Cyclops and the Starjammers for all intents and purposes. I'm going to try it, you know, I hate Cyclops, pro Wolverine all the way. But yeah, this younger Cyclops, you know, if he becomes Kirk in space, fuck yeah, let's do this. That's what I'm rooting for. Become the man lady, because you're not held down by Jean anymore. You don't need her. I need her. Go ahead, Taser.
Okay.
Daddy's home. Daddy's home. I get to go out into the universe and be with Daddy. Yay! Woo! I'm in the spaceship because I'm with Daddy. And yeah. This has to be one of the most I don't give a fuck books that I have seen come down the pike in a long while. I don't care about young Scott Summers. You know, I granted, the book that they're in is interesting, but that's because of the whole dynamic. Scott Summers himself, you know, and that he now gets to hang out with Daddy. Yay, I get to hang out with, I don't even know what Corsair's doing nowadays because, you know, the whole rebellion thing is over, and I think the Starjammers are broken up.
Well, I think. I know you're not reading all the.
I know Hezbollah, whatever her name is, the skunk lady. Didn't she die off or get kicked out or whatever the fuck?
Can I tell you what's going on? They just showed up in the most recent issue of All New X-Men.
I haven't read that yet. Okay, so yeah, I guess I'll check that out then.
Yeah.
It's
with the crossover right. with Guardians of the Galaxy right now.
Anyway, all right. So okay. That kind of explains stuff at least, somewhat anyway. But there should be a bit of interest on my end just to see how that plays out when you have you know, young Scott getting to hook back up with his dad and have, you know, something of the childhood that he didn't get. But I don't care, and I don't know why. Probably because I would have liked to, if this had happened much, much earlier, you know, long before that whole, you know, Brotherhood for the Evil Mutants from the Future showed up, that whole mess, you know, that would have been something that would have been interesting, and then I would have made that the 4-issue mini, you know, while Scott's off doing whatever. Okay, yeah, fine, you get to explore this, then I would have been interested. And now it's like, you know, because the kids are still here, and, you know, I don't know, I'm just... I'm not feeling the enthusiasm that I have more enthusiasm for the Shang-Chi book than I have for this, you know, and you can tell how enthusiastic I was about that. I don't know. I don't even know if I'll even touch the first issue. I'll be perfectly honest. I want to back away and leave this book alone so that it dies to death. Hopefully it'll die a faster death than Avengers Assembled, because that book ran for too fucking long, in my opinion. Way too fucking long. But, you know, because it's Marvel and because it's me, this book will last. And I'll just, you know, and Wes will read it, because Wes, there you go.
Well, it's Cyclops, and we all know he loves Cyclops, so.
Yes, because Wes.
Well, no, hold on. Playing Devil's Advocate here, he doesn't like, he likes older Cyclops. He likes them older.
He's this book because it's the mutant and because he's West. I'm saying it now.
Are you saying black is a mutation now? That's really racist.
Yes, I am. I just like fucking West. Anyway, I don't have any interest for this book, really. It's interesting in concept, but I don't care enough. I'll probably read it if you make it, like, you know, the book of the week, but I think I'm going to pass this one up.
Jonathan.
The only positive I have for this is the fact it's Greg Rucka writing it, and otherwise I could really give two shits to the wind on it. It's another fucking mutant title, for one. And the last time I heard about Corsair, he was being compost after being killed by his own son. And now you're doing new slash old young Cyclops, you know, hanging out with his father. And I'm just like, can we quit milking the teats for the original X-Men being in our time and finally get the resolution and send them back?
It's only been a year. You guys talk about things not lasting, and then when something gets you lasting, you don't want it to last. What the hell?
It depends on what it is, though. It's just, I don't know.
They've been here too long.
It's been a year.
Yeah, they've been here too long.
And then not even that, like probably in their time, probably like 4 months.
They've been here too long.
Nope. They can't even go back. They couldn't even
They've
send
been them. Here way too fucking long.
Nah, they can
way, way.
And when, anyway, they, and when they tried to send them back, they couldn't send them back. Yep.
That's because they just, because Bendis is, until Bendis loses interest, we're going to be seeing it. And I will say that All New X-Men has been a good title, but it's about time for them.
Why do you want to destroy a good thing, damn it?
Well, they're destroying the good thing by themselves by giving them a
good title. They're old men stuck in their ways.
Yeah, Rolf. But no, seriously, I just, I'm again, it's the whole X burnout for me. It's like, every time I look, it's like another fucking number one dealing with a mutant. And I used to be one of the major, I used to have the big, I mean, long dog silver type of hard-on for the X-Men back in the day. And now it's more like I see it and I'm about the size of Peter Dinklage. And it just, they just need to kind of shrink it down, so to speak, no pun intended. And I really don't, I just don't, I my, my I just, the only positive I've seen on this is that it's Rucka, at least he's trying to want to do something different. But otherwise, why another fucking mutant title? Why does it have to be anything that's mutant? I mean, it's almost,
hey,
Avengers,
hey,
are almost as bad.
Mutants are fine, okay? Don't be hating on the mutants, okay? Because, you know, if you hate mutants, then you're probably a racist. Just saying.
Speciesist, whatever.
Oh, I'm not a racist. I hate everybody, buddy. I'm an equal opportunity offender. But,
that response is so tired and old.
But it's
just like me. I'm tired and old. But, no, but all jokes and stuff aside, and all my bitching aside, I'm not looking forward to this. I just really don't have a good outlook for it. I'll just leave it at that, and we'll go from there.
All right, Brian, give your final thoughts.
I'll read it. I enjoy Young Cyclops. I enjoy having the younger X-Men around. I think it's interesting. I think it's a breath of fresh air. I mean,
High five.
Shock itself.
The same age. That's
straight. Shut up, Taser. I'm talking. The culture shock itself has played out, sure, but it's interesting to see how these characters evolve and change and stuff, considering their circumstances. And I enjoy watching it happen month by month. I mean, it's really just, it's something new to look forward to, you know? And I myself will definitely check out Young Cyclops' series. I mean, it seems interesting enough, and like I said, I do enjoy Greg Rucka. And, I mean, hey, Corsair is a badass bitch, okay? He just is. Okay? He leads a space pirate crew. How awesome is that? Seriously. Honestly.
Gene, don't you like me anymore? Gene, wait.
Oh, my God.
No, Gene's fine. No, Gene's fine. All right, let's move on. Brian, do we have one more five piece of news?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah, sure. Hey folks, you like Gambit? was that? You said no? Oh, well, then, okay, never mind then. No. So guess what, kids? Gambit, the hero who was so meagerly portrayed in X-Men Origins Wolverine, I think we all remember how that went down.
He had a staff that was more than enough.
Hey, shut up.
He threw cards. That exploded. What more the fuck do you want?
I want character development, god damn it.
Oh, fuck that. Just give me shit that explodes.
Anyway, so, yeah, kids. Gambit may be coming to a silver screen near you once more. Only he's not being played by Taylor Kitsch, who at this point has become box office poison. No. He'll be played by none other than the 21 Jump Street alum, Channing Tatum, who himself has made the case that he would make a great Gambit because he grew up in Louisiana near Cajuns, and he does real good at mocking their accents. And
he doesn't sound... I mean, I liked him in G.I. Joe, but...
I know, I was actually kind of disappointed.
Died.
I was disappointed they killed him off in G.I. Joe. I wanted to see
him. Well, I mean, I know this is a completely different role, and it's not a testament to him as he should play Gambit or not, but I really enjoyed him in 21 Jump Street. I thought that movie was really funny.
Okay, well, let's just go forward on this, pretty much saying that, anyway, Laura Schuldonner, who... we all know kind of runs the shots over at Fox as far as the X-Men franchise go. She's been very vocally supportive of Channing Tatum getting this role. And they are saying that this could lead to a potential starting or rebooting, I guess you would call it, of the Gambit franchise, quote-unquote. And so we'll see how that pans out. But I think a member of our board put it best when the original article was posted by Mr. W. West, it read, Channing Tatum would, quote-unquote, kill it as Gambit, says Taylor Kitsch. And Mr. Michael Hyde, the always witty Mr. Hyde, had responded, if it is the Gambit franchise, I agree. And I have to say I agree, too. Personally, I mean, he's a pretty face, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm sure it'll get females in the seats, especially when he's got the
Isn't that what Gambit's supposed to do? He drews in the females.
If they give him the long hair and the accent, I'm sure he's gonna get female asses in those seats. And then when the females leave, the seats will be sopping wet. But that's not the point I'm trying to make here. The point is, you're trying to build something into an X-Men franchise, and honestly, the character's a bit thin to support his own movie, personally. I always thought, anyway. I've never fallen under the spell of Gambit. I know there are people who love Gambit to bits. He's one of the top-tier, quote-unquote, favorite mutants. When you talk about your favorite X-Men character, Gambit's almost always on the list of people.
If you grew up like people our age, even seen him before, he's not even on the fucking list. And who the fuck is this idiot coming around here?
He's the next generation of favorite mutants, I guess.
People like Gambit because he was in the cartoon. Let's be honest right here. It's the reason why people like Gambit, and he had a staff. Let's be honest. That's why I like Gambit in the
early days. I would disagree with that.
No, I'm just
Gambit,
talking about...
Even before the cartoon came out, mm-hmm. Gambit was got a lot
of talk.
But
he exploded in popularity when that cartoon came out.
Well, I mean, everybody exploded in popularity when the cartoon came out.
Yeah, but everybody, at least when I was a little kid, either A, wanted to be Wolverine or fucking Gambit. And if you were Cyclops, you were the sad sack, and I was always
hey! I like Cyclops, goddammit.
He was such a stiff in that cartoon. Anyways, now I want to watch this.
Well, he was the only other prime male character there, aside from Cyclops and Wolverine. I mean, look who you had. You had Beast.
They could have had They had, like, cameos of, like, Colossus and
Optimus. Yeah, cameos.
But, like, well, I want you to, why don't you stay? Fuck you. Anyways, so, one, okay, I'm getting this out of the way. James, anytime I hear the name James Tatum, I automatically think of a female, because this is what it sounds like. No disrespect to the man.
Here, John.
Yay. You know.
Step up.
Yeah, he was in that movie, wasn't he?
And Step Up too.
Was he in Step Up too?
Yeah, he made a cameo.
That's funny. You know, I enjoyed him in the. I haven't seen G.I. Joe Retaliation. I've seen G.I. Joe 1 for that. I've never seen it. I want to because I kind of like the first G.I. Joe movie.
The RZA's acting made it so worthwhile.
Okay, so back to Channing Tatum. You know, if the only way that could get me personally to watch this movie is if Rogue was in it involved somehow, and that's just the sappy romance side of me to see that relationship play out. But since there's no guarantee that they'll get Anna Paquin to reprise her, like, you know, she goes to Louisiana for some reason, for some unknown reason whatsoever, and meets up with Remy LeBeau, other than the Thieves Guild stuff, you know.
Isn't she already in Louisiana on that vampire show?
Crossover that we all wanted. True Blood cross X-Men.
Yeah, it turns out Sookie Stackhouse is just a personality imposed by the Purple Man. And in fact, she's Rogue. She's been Rogue this whole time.
I can see that happening.
That's funny.
I can see that happening. That's sad.
So,
Bay Fox Studios. I'm available for hire. Huh?
So the point is, if that's not going to be in it, and, you know, it could be. You never know. They could contact Anna Paquin, like, hey, would you like to do this Gambit movie with Channing Tatum? You know,
yeah, and we'll cut you out this time.
You know, I would go see it then, and to see him, you know, one, he has to have the accent. That's another thing and I'm not sure if it was Taylor Kitsch's fault or the director who said, don't do the accent, because I don't know. When he tried to do it, it was terrible. Maybe that's why they said, okay, fuck it, next day he can't do this shit. But if...
Is it like Kevin Costner's accent and Robin Hood?
It was...
So fucking horrible.
Pretty much. So, if he can do that Gambit accent, the Cajun accent, well, and pull it off, then Gambit's not a complex character. He's not, let's face it. You know, he's not Rorschach. If he can pull off the suave, again, I would want Rogue to be in this movie, just for that romance and or just that relationship. And if they have chemistry, then yeah, I'll peek at it 3 weeks after the movie came out when nobody's there and nobody can look at me like, why the fuck are you here? Get those things together and, you know, put it in the bayou, you know, Thieves Guild.
I guarantee.
Shit, if they play John Fogerty's Born in the Bayou in that movie, I might just go just to see that happen.
You know, I don't know.
Smoke over water.
Bayou in the sky.
I'm just saying, I'll go see it, okay? I'll go see it. Y'all, bam, fuckers.
Bam, I see you need to have John Fogerty.
I see trouble on the way. Bing,
bing. This is what happened in a game movie. We would all get distracted and just start seeing a smoke.
What
the fuck did that
come from? I think it says a lot that we're really just laughing at this about how much hope we have for this movie.
It could have awesome soundtracks. That's the most I'm hoping for this.
The best thing about the movie is the soundtrack.
The soundtrack could be excellent.
I've lost control.
Okay, I'm done. That movie's gonna suck. okay. Okay, I'm good. But that movie will suck. I'm sorry. Oh, damn. I get to sit there for an hour and 45 with my eyes closed just listening for Conducet. Holy shit. Yeah, I did that. Thank you very much.
So is there anything more to say, or do y'all want to, or is that pretty much says it all?
Hey, yeah, I'm good.
All right. So with the joke out of the way, Brian Frost got to neglect that there is a Black Widow movie also potentially in development, starring everybody's favorite redhead slash blonde haired woman, Scarlett Johansson. You know, do it. Shove it to Warner Brothers. Tell them, hey, we did it first. I'd much prefer a Ms. Marvel movie or Captain Marvel movie first, starring Carol Danvers first. But hey, Black Widow's not a bad alternative, you know? That or Spider-Woman? Spider-Woman. Give me Spider-Woman.
Yeah, that's an idea.
Or Spider-Woman, Black Widow, or Black Widow and Spider-Woman. Make it. Yeah, because I know a lot of people are bitching that the movie's not called Captain America and Black Widow, you know? But whatever. Y'all say something. I like the idea. If it happens, it happens.
Are we still talking about Spider-Woman?
We're talking about Spider-Woman.
Spider-Woman!
As long as you're doing some track.
I think Tate's is still winded.
Yeah. Honestly, I would look forward to a Black Widow movie. Scarlett Johansson's been getting better and better as the character, and she's of the, you know, peripheral characters that we've seen, probably would deserve her own movie. And
yeah, she keeps showing up at everyone else's movie and not getting her own. It's actually kind of like
Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury.
Well, Sam Jackson is, you know, if they're gonna do a Nick Fury movie, they should take from the real Nick Fury and his awesome source material, not Ultimate Nick Fury, because Ultimate Nick Fury is beyond douchey and actually kind of an evil mastermind.
To be fair,
which is exactly why it would be excellent to have an Ultimate Nick Fury movie.
Well, I'm sure they'll get to that eventually.
But continue, please. I'm sorry.
I think you can go ahead and speak, Taser.
Okay. I thoroughly can get behind a Black Widow movie. As long as she's in that black leather pants thing.
As long as we get behind Black Widow.
As long as we get the cameraman to give us those ass shots.
I second that.
You know, I've noticed a trend about some superhero movies. Look at The Spirit. Look at Ghost Rider, the first one, and look at Avengers. Tasty asses and tight, you know, tight-fitting clothing, they do a real good job of giving us that butt shot. And Scarlett Johansson was in The Spirit, wasn't she?
She probably was.
Yes, she was.
She's right. Yeah, exactly. There you go. And she wore tight leather pants in that too. But no, seriously though, her nicely formed ass aside, I would really like to see what they do with a Black Widow movie, considering how we've seen her play out, you know, in the last three films so far. They'll probably do an origin, and it'll probably have to do with
Hawkeye.
Was it the Red Room? And actually, yeah, because they've been shipping that. Black Widow and Hawkeye as a thing, whether they're actually connected romantically or not,
or
they've popped up.
Didn't Hawkeye and Black Widow have their own miniseries a little while back together? They had it like, they had their own titled series. I can't remember what the hell it was called, though. I gotta look.
Well, they were in the, I know they were the first run of the new Secret Avengers bit, but I don't know anything else beyond that.
No,
although I do know that when it came to animation, Black Widow and Hawkeye and Iron Man Rise of the Technovore, Black Widow and Hawkeye in Iron Man Adventures, and one other place. It was and in Earth's Mightiest
Heroes.
Thank you. They had a like some type of thing in that too. You know, so people, for whatever reason, Marvel just kind of likes the.
Well, they did that with. They did that in Ultimates War when they first showed up. They were partners for years. Black Ops for Nick Fury. So it stems from that.
Were they partners for years, or were they just S.H.I.E.L.D. agents? I don't remember them being partners for years.
They were agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they were also partners because they just, you know, you like working with your partner. And I just think like they put them. I think they put them in the cartoon, like paired together like that, because they knew in the movie they probably had an idea in the movie that they were going to have the repertoire, or at least the history, that it is. But hey,
Jeremy Renner should
be in the movie. Is all I'm saying. Put Jeremy Renner in the movie.
Well, yeah. Well, for continuity's sake, if anything else, yes. I don't really care if it's Jeremy Renner or not, because he hasn't really impressed me as Hawkeye. I got to be honest.
But it's just been, he didn't really have a lot to work with in
the movie. Right, exactly. You know, and that's what I'm saying. He hasn't done much. They haven't given him much. So I'm not blaming him.
Yeah.
You know, if he's not there, I don't think I'd miss him. But if he's there, cool. But I'd like to see what they do with, you know, Natasha Romanoff, Black Widow. And as long as they don't do what they did with freaking Elektra, you know, I must guard the little girl who doesn't really need it. You know, they don't kind of take badass chicken sticker.
What if we're talking like a Yelena Belova thing here? What about that? Could we get behind that?
Another Black Widow?
What was that, the second one? We know
Black Widow kind of sort of defected, so why don't we have her meet her replacement, quote unquote, Yelena Belova.
Oh, from the other side?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
All right. Cool. That could be cool. Especially if it turns into like some kind of manhunt. You know?
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
On the
front. And we're talking, they do, you know, they do the hardcore people gotta die thing, you know.
They could have Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury do like Tommy Lee Jones from The Fugitive.
Yes. What? Yes. I would. No, not even that. U.S. agents.
Oh!
U.S. agents. Okay. Which had Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. But yeah, I could definitely get behind that as long as they keep her the same type of character that she's been to date and don't just try to throw in something that reminds us she's a woman. You know? No, I don't want that. I want the chick who kicks ass and can get in and out of situations. This is the woman who can
outwit the god of mischief himself. She needs her sort of... She just needs something tailored to her specific abilities, and that is far beyond... Because, let's face it, the Natasha we've seen is not... She's not Mother Hen, really. She's actually... If you've seen this, if you noticed in Avengers when she was quote-unquote taking care of Clint after he hit his head, she's not the motherly type. So... Putting her in that situation where either that happens or she swoons at some man's presence, it's not. Don't do that. It's not.
Yeah, her. I don't want madness either. Yeah, no, I don't want that. No.
You know, I kind of do hope, and this is more for Winter Soldier than anything else, that they do hint at their like maybe they hint that Natasha is older than what she appears to be, and they hint that she knows Bucky from the Red Room. If they do imply, I kind of hope they do that. I kind of want that.
Yeah.
That's just me. I like that idea of, like, you know, I like that history. So it'd be cool. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, because that's just my own. But if it does happen, it'll be like, ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. I'm good if it's not there. I'm good if it is. Yeah, I don't really care a whole lot about that. So, you know, fine, whatever. But, yeah, I just... I don't want them to just take and kind of add, and I don't want to say female issues, but I don't want them to declaw her, you know? I want her kept tough, somebody who's kept on point, and I think it would probably be a good thing if it ends up being multinational, like a multinational story. You know, they're in, you know, they're in Moscow at some point. They're in, I don't know, in America, of course, maybe someplace in China, you know, something that bounces around.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, would be a very, very good adventure. Yeah, I would definitely, I could definitely support a Black Widow movie, definitely.
So, John, you've been relatively quiet.
I would support it. I think if, you know, any of the various story, they've got some good stuff to mine for it. I wouldn't mind seeing something maybe of the Winter Soldier storyline, or, you know, have her hop around the world fighting her counterpart. Just as long as they just get the right director, right script, and know that they can't mess it up because they know that it would mess up with the Avengers stuff, I'm all for it. So we'll just have to, I'm just a wait and see. And they better have a good soundtrack for it. That's all I can say.
Ah.
So I had to say it, sorry.
Fair enough.
All right, so that does it for the news segment of the show. So let's go ahead and move on to our Book of the Week, which features the sensational She-Hulk number one, written by Charles Soule, art by...
Well, it doesn't have that byline, but...
No, I'm calling it that. I'm calling it that.
That's because you're a dick.
I like the name, since I like the word sensational She-Hulk.
Yeah, I know you like it.
All right, so anyways, Charles Soule and Javier Pulido, who was the other artist on Daredevil, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And this...
He's got a thing for superhero lawyers, apparently.
Apparently. Well, whatever. So,
yeah.
Here, a lot of people are expecting, you know, maybe the Ally McBeal comparison for here. I never read Ally, never watched that show.
The fuck is Ally McBeal?
Really?
Ally McBeal is actually a very good show.
I've never seen it, but I'm surprised Brian is my age and he doesn't know what the fuck that is. Even I knew what it was, and I didn't even watch it.
Oh, is that J.J. Abrams thing? Well, I thought it was a J.J. Abrams thing.
Smack yourself.
Okay, stop talking, Brian. Stop talking. So this issue, basically, if you're a fan of lawyers and lawyer stuff like I am, you will like this issue. If you are looking for She-Hulk smash, there's a point where she does smash, but it's not what you expect. So basically, this is a lot of fast banter, lawyer jargon. I really love how Jennifer is just overconfident in the beginning. Like, yeah, I got this. They're going to give me, you know, a raid. They're going to give me all this stuff. And then when she doesn't get them, it's like, wait, what? Huh? And then she does what every single person in the world wants to do after she hears the news. She comes in and, she just touches the table and breaks it. And just walks away. I'm pretty sure everybody in America wants to do that to their boss at one point in time. So she quits her law practice, she goes to the lawyer bar, and it turns out that this woman was involved with a case involving Stark Industries. Of course, that already gets a little crazy. And the villain foreman is on the hood, who killed the husband over some tech issues, and Stark, I believe, was suing or something? I can't remember.
No, the wife was suing Stark because she thought he stole the tech from her husband without compensation.
So in hilarious fashion, she goes to Stark. Oh, they have a relationship. They know each other. They're former Avengers. And so, but the second that she mentions that mentions any lawyer business or any sort of thing, she meets with these sort of android kind of things or hologram programs. The minute she mentions lawyer, they change programs. Please go to the 18th floor. But I'm here. Please go to the 18th. I thought that was freaking hilarious.
But dude, legal though?
And legal was hilarious in all the wrong ways. And he's basically Tony Stark's legal department, which I thought was freaking hysterical. Blocks of text, you know, sort of explaining the idea of sort of going over the history of Tony Stark, which is kind of funny. At least I found funny and interesting. That all happened. So you get to lawyer proceedings, and like any big company lawyer does, the legal team of Stark Industries buries her in paperwork, because that's how they win. You ask any lawyer who fights against a big company, that's how they win. They bury you in paperwork to where you'll never get out of it. So finally, She-Hulk goes to the garage to see if she can find something, a smoking gun. And she gets attacked, little fun action, and she's pinned. And so the robot, and so she goes into Stark Tower trying to get some answers. And like the robot's like, if you're here on legal actions, you must go to the 18th floor to see legal again. She goes, oh, I'm not here on legal capacity. I'm here on, I'm She-Hulk all the way. And she beats she beats the crap out of it. And so it's revealed that Tony doesn't really know what the hell is going on. He's like, I don't know. I have people to deal with that. Which, yeah. You know, it's just expected.
A man running a company of his size and scope can't be privy to all the details. So yeah. It sort of falls like what he just let people handle things for him, but that results in stuff like what the fuck happened with this woman and the lawyers, obviously.
Yeah, and so she basically, Stark ends the settlement, gives the wife a big check, which also results in She-Hulk getting a big check of $150,000.
Woo, hell of a commission.
So,
payout.
Which is fine, whatever. So, which leads to She-Hulk moving right across, I'm assuming that's the Brooklyn Bridge or the George Washington State Bridge, it's hard to tell, or the, and opens her own law practice, which ends the first issue. So we see She-Hulk quit her job, help somebody, and get started a new law practice, all in a span of 20 pages. That being said, I love this book. I love it. I love it. I love it. This is what I wanted. This is what I'm excited for. Is it She-Hulk smashing? No, but fuck it. I don't give a damn. I love Jennifer and her sort of "I got this" attitude. It's just great. It's she's fun. She's fun to be around. I look.
She's a strong, independent Hulk who don't need no other company.
Yep. And so I can't wait to see where they go next. It leaves a whole variety of options, especially since Matt Murdock is moving out to San Francisco, so that means the lawyer business for superheroes is wide opened up for Jennifer. So I really like this. I you know, I can understand if you were turned off by the lawyer stuff and you were expecting this, but hey, Jennifer is also a lawyer, and I want to see more of that. It's something different other than the typical punch this kind of thing, you know? So yeah, I give She-Hulk number one, a 4.5 out of 5.
Ooh.
I really like this. She's a strong female character with an interesting aspect to it. I'm always fascinated by the lawyer side of things. It's part of the reason why I like Daredevil so much. It's part, not all. So I look forward to seeing where they take this direction of the book going forward. So yeah, John, you're apparently the opposite of me. I'm curious to hear why.
Well, first off, the art just kind of made me ill. I could not stand the art. I will admit there were bits and pieces of the title that I genuinely liked. Her expecting the bonus and not getting that and walking away and going, oh, wait a minute, the table's made for Madripoor, right? I've heard some really bad stuff about their quality control issues, and does the little fingertip on the table and splitting it in half. I did chuckle at that. I don't know. I guess I was expecting, I wanted to see more of the lawyering stuff, and I guess I just didn't get the amount that I was expecting because they were trying to balance it out with other things. And I don't know. I just could not get into it. And, I mean, her and Tony Stark was funny. I will agree with that. But it just didn't really, you know, pop for me. You know what I mean? We all have that one particular title that everybody else might like, and you're just looking at it and reading it upside down to see maybe if it makes more sense. Sideways, you know. And I was just like, nope, this is not She-Hulk that I knew and loved, and they're not, I guess maybe the next issue will be more of what I would like to see, which is her getting her own business, because I know she's a good lawyer, and they don't often, you know, show that side of her, because they have to be all cutesy with her and stuff like that, and a lot of her other appearances and her other titles that she's had. And I don't know. I guess the right, there wasn't really a good balance to it. The artwork threw me off, and the writing wasn't as good as I was hoping for. And while I have cooled down insanely compared to what I was when I first read it, this is probably the worst title I've read so far this year, and that's including, and I've read some wide variety of stuff, and I have to give it a 2 points, you know, out of 5, just for the fact of a couple of the scenes. And there is a good possible shot at it getting better with the next issue. I might pick up issue 2 just to see where it goes, but otherwise I was just like, this was a one and done for me, and I'm very disappointed in how they handled Jennifer in this one. So that's about all I can say. So it just, I was just disgusted.
That was probably the most tame hatred I've ever heard on this podcast.
Well, I've calmed down considerably since then. And if I were to pick it up again, I probably would probably go Hulk smash. But sitting down and, you know, letting my wrath, you know, calm down and just kind of mull it over, it just, I don't know, it was more meh, but I was really not happy when I read it. So that's all I can really say on it.
Taser?
I didn't hate it, but it wasn't like, oh yeah, I gotta keep reading this. I was a fan of Ally McBeal. I watched The Practice in reruns because I didn't watch it first run, and then I stopped once Shatner got on because Shatner. Book, I kind of, and I like Boston Public, by the way. Anything with a lot of stuff with David Kelly. There you go. That was his name, David Kelly. I liked this. This was quirky working woman, you know, who also happens to have been a superhero. And I don't know. This actually felt kind of formulaic, you know. She's tapped. Oh, my performance review. Ha ha. Yes, I've done a good job. I'm going to get Okay, you know what? Fine. Later for you people. I'm out. And of course, the table cracking thing was actually kind of funny and oh so justly deserved. But I saw it coming, you know. And she didn't look like she was, you know, going to be down and out or anything. So when the lady walked up to her and says, "Could you look at you? Oh yeah, you used to be a civilian." I was like, "Yes, okay. Let me take a look at it. Oh, I know how to handle this. Cool." So when she gets to the Stark Tower, and you know she meets the hologram twins, I kind of expected. I didn't expect her to actually talk to them. I kind of expected her to just kind of go, "Yeah, Avengers ID," and just, you know, go right on through. But you know, she went there on business, and then got the whole, you know, 18th floor. We meet Legal. Legal was funny. I'm not even going to lie about that. Legal actually had me smiling. I thought that was really, really, really funny. But by the fact that they directed her to the 18th floor just had me going, oh, I know how this is going to play out. And it played out exactly like I thought. I just didn't know it would be old guy. But there we have it. So then, you know, there's the court thing. And of course, you know, you have the diversionary let's throw everything at her to try to hold this in court because we don't want her to win, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, her getting tired of that and enforcing the issue and actually just going to see Tony. And then, of course, it all gets handled out and there's a payout and what have you. Her getting the office at the end, I don't know. That $150,000 didn't seem a whole lot to me, considering I assume she's been making a very good living for that first firm that she was with, and you know, I figure she's probably getting something on the Avengers end, you know. That's an assumption on my end. So when she gets this check and then, you know, she decides to open up her own office, you know, and I'm, oh, okay. I didn't know Daredevil was moving to, you know, Cali. So, okay, yeah, fine. They can play, you know, lawyer for superheroes or what, or the weird or whatever it is that they plan on doing. Yeah, fine. She can fit that mold. But I guess I don't know if I'd want to actually read that. They kind of played something similar with Power Girl before, you know, New 52 rolled around. But it really was mostly about her, a little bit about the business, but it was her doing stuff and also trying to handle the business stuff on the side, which was way more interesting. I don't know if they'll make that same kind of attempt here or if it will be more lawyer, you know, more Jennifer Walters, and I also happen to be She-Hulk. I don't think I'll stick around for that. You know, I'm not the superhuman lawyer. I no. I'm sorry. That's not fun. I didn't enjoy that with Daredevil. I don't think I'll enjoy it here. Even though Jennifer is a more palatable character to me than Matt Murdock was. You know, and I like She-Hulk. She-Hulk is funny. I don't know, this book wasn't bad, but it was kind of predictable, a bit formulaic, and it was a bit, I don't know, sitcomish. No, excuse me, not sitcomish. It was a bit TV, you know, which isn't horrible, but it's not exactly a good thing. So, I'll give it the standard 3. It wasn't a bad book, but it kind of needs to do something else for the next 2 to get me to stick around. So, yeah, I'll stick around for at least the next 2 anyway. I want to close this out. I'll give it a, and I hadn't thought about it before. I've got to be honest. It gets a 3. There you go. It gets a 3. I wasn't that big a fan of the art. The art wasn't horrible, but it wasn't what I was expecting. Yeah. There you go.
Brian, quickly, what is your thoughts on She-Hulk number 1?
I immensely enjoyed it. I did enjoy, though, it's something I just found amusing looking back on it, reading it for a second time, just how much people don't treat She-Hulk like she's She-Hulk. And I don't know if that's what Taser was speaking about earlier, but it just seems so funny. Because in the beginning, when she goes to sit down with the partners at her law firm to discuss her bonus, the way they talk her down doesn't strike me as the way any sane person would talk down a Hulk. I don't care if you're paying her a very competitive salary. You don't talk to She-Hulk telling her you're just using her for connections. You don't do that. And then you don't go around and fire her, calling her a bad investment when she can still hear you. You don't do that. And
people, see, that's the thing, though. That's the probably one of the few things I like about – I don't want to say few things, but that's one of the things I like about She-Hulk is that she's really Jennifer Walters, and she lives her life that way. And, you know, because she can behave, you know,
God
she
damn
can
it,
behave.
Hulk can't take you
she's
anywhere.
A rational person. So, you're going to take and treat her as such, which means – you can dress her down and, you know, tell her how much she failed and blah, 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 without worrying about, oh, my God, she's going to cave my head in with my feet.
Fair enough, but she did break their very expensive table.
Which was a bit of revenge from a – that was a rational act.
Hey, I'm not saying I didn't think it was awesome. I'm not saying I didn't think it was awesome when they did that. I am just saying that it amuses me how much it seems they go to lengths to how – not just how the writing restricts, but how Jennifer Walters restricts herself. And she really isn't Bruce Banner in that sense, you know?
That's fair.
Yeah, fair enough. She does a lot of – but that doesn't take away from the fact that I enjoyed – with or without that, I enjoyed it wholeheartedly. Soleil knows how to write a book, very obviously. Legal amused me to no end, as did the whole pretty much anything that went on Stark Tower was pretty much just entertaining throughout. And the art itself by Javier Pulido, I enjoyed it. I mean, I did enjoy his past work on Daredevil. So to see him moving over into another book with a New York superhero lawyer, it suits him, I suppose. That having been said, my dreams of having a Murdoch Nelson and Walters law firm are now dead and in the water, what with Matt moving out to City by the Bay. But you know what? It's the little things you got to take away from all this. And I enjoyed this book immensely. I'll definitely be picking up the second issue and the third, which promises an interaction with none other than Victor Von Doom himself. So that'll be interesting to see. So, and also, I just feel like I should say, fucking Scotty Young, man. Fucking Scotty Young. Crushing it again on another variant cover for She-Hulk. I thought it was brilliant. Was it Taser gave it a 3, right? Ben, you gave it like a 4.5 or something? I'll give it a 4. I would have enjoyed more smashing, but I'll give it a solid 4. I thought it was a very enjoyable read. I recommend it to anybody. And I'll definitely be picking up the next issue. So
That's fun. Okay, now it's time for the individual reviews time. I'm getting emotional because I'm reviewing the second to last issue for me, because I will not be picking up the series when it relaunches next month with Wolverine the X-Men number 41. You know, I've enjoyed the series from the beginning.
Why are they relaunching this?
Because all new Marvel now. Don't question it. Just keep going. So, who gives a shit? It's the same book. Who cares about the number? Anyways, this issue is basically the firing of Toad. Obviously, it was Toad who led some of the Quentin Quire and Edie, I don't know how to pronounce her name, to the Hellfire Club. So, basically, Wolverine and Iceman Beast, that had the school leaders of the Jean Grey School, basically fired him. And so in the very first panel, you could tell where the tone is getting is that, you know, Storm asks him, is there anything, do you feel that would, defend yourself, please, you know, do it. And he whispers, all I did it for love. His obviously reference to his, pseudo romance with Husk that he's had over the course of this book. And in a funny bit, Krakoa, who I'm assuming, because, you know, he's the Joe's janitor, so he's also the gardener. He's everything. He fixed the Jean Grey School for all intents and purposes. And Krakoa actually rises up out of the ground and starts crying for Toad and actually cries lava, which I found quite humorous. And even the X-Men are like, should we feel bad? I shouldn't feel bad. And so you get a little heart-to-heart exchange between Husk and Toad and, you know, and she reveals that when she husks out, it doesn't change just her body, but it affects her mind. And that's the reason why she's not being fired, because it wasn't necessarily controlling her mind. And Beast is helping her to learn how to control that. And they gave her a new job. Meanwhile, Toad is out on the streets and, you know. Toad is like, well, and so she doesn't remember any of the romance that they had. So, like, it's like, you fall in love with this girl. You have times, you love each other, she loves you, now she doesn't remember. And it's just like, oh, way to kick it in. I get fired from my job, now the girl that I love doesn't love me anymore because she doesn't remember. Lovely. But in a slight bit of positive news, with a slight positive twist, she says, well, I may not remember, but I would like to, and let's go to a coffee shop, and sort of smiles, and like Krakoa, like, get a big question mark, says, it's like, what do you think? And Toad says, what do you think I'm going to do? Of course I'm going to. Needless to say, because this is the X-Men, they are attacked by some members of the Hellfire Squad. For unknown reasons, I believe it's just for revenge. And Toad, and spreads out into the nearby small town, and Toad rescues this young girl, and the girl says, thank you, Mr. X-Man. And then Toad, jumping off, says, not an X-Man. I just scrubbed their toilets. Like, God damn it, Toad. So Toad, meanwhile, runs into Dr. Frankenstein, the younger one, and the black kid, in a very funny exchange where they run a car. Like, hey, we can steal that car. You drive. No, you drive. Neither of us know how to drive, do we? I never learned. We had jetpacks all the time. which I thought was quite humorous. So Toad hops in to confront both of them, and one of the black kid, but the black kid threatens to shoot him, and Toad, you know, basically feeling like he has nothing left to lose, just didn't shoot me. And he goes, and the kid goes, I've shot janitors before. Toad says, I'm not a janitor. And then, what the hell are you? Pull the trigger and find out. And the kid can't pull it. And so Toad basically decides to go with the kids. He doesn't meet up with Husk, leaving her in a destroyed coffee shop, sad and alone. And Toad, meanwhile, jetpacks off away by himself. And it's funny is that apparently Jean Grey School, at least cleanliness, falls apart while he's gone. Husk is the new guidance counselor, which is pretty funny. I found it hilarious. So this was, and basically all sums up to Wolverine saying that, well, he was a Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. You really can't change a person. And, you know, I think it was either Beast who said, well, that's what they said about you at one point. So it was kind of sad. You know, I didn't think I'd feel anything for Toad. You know, he's this sad sack of shit. Kind of creepy at some points, depending on how he's written. But, like, I felt bad for him because I think most guys can tell you they've been in a situation, maybe not the amnesia girl, but, like, you like a girl, you have some good times, but yet things don't work out, and it's like, and then you lose your job. It's like, what the fuck? And then you just, sometimes people just reverse the old habits just because that's a comforting and easy thing to do. And it just sucks to see him in this situation of, like, I'm like, God damn it, Toad, you didn't have to, whatever, okay. You're going to do what you're going to do. So, yeah, you know, I'm sad that this book is ending, and next issue is the graduation issue, so it'll be interesting to see how this volume of it wraps up and when they restart and when it continues. I'm just going to say it continues, because outside of the numbering, it's not going to change that much, at least, when it continues next month. But in terms of the ending of this volume, this is a nice closure to Toad's story, and I'm going to miss that romance he had with Huss. It was nice and cute throughout the 40-plus issues. 4 out of 5 for me. Bring on...
A quick question?
Yeah.
Through the course of the book, Toad's been there pretty much from the start, right?
Yeah, he's been the janitor from the start.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How much did we see... Like, how much did we see with Toad in regards to, like, him messing up, him, you know, doing something that was like, Toad, or anything like that?
Nothing like that. He was pretty much just there cleaning and, like, you know, anything that happened to him was because Duke did something to him on accident, that I remember.
Okay.
There isn't, it's not, like, he was there and he had a presence, but he wasn't, like, and he had a focal point in the last arc, for sure. But, you know, he was just there from the start. But there was never a, God damn it, Toad. There was never that.
Okay, because see, what I'm thinking is, you know, I would look at this and I'd go, did he really deserve to be fired?
Well, they fired him on the basis because he led the kids. He took the kids to the Hellfire School. That's why they fired him, because we can't have that. You can't have that shit. So that was their basis. Not because of his job performance, because...
I know, I understand that. Well, let me ask you this, since you read it.
Yeah.
Would that have been, based on his presence, performance, and everything else, would that have been something that he should have been fired for, or is that something that,
you know,
yeah, you could give him another shot?
You know what I think it is, and I think it has to come down to the fact that of his past, and this is where a person's past can come to bite them in the ass, despite that he was confident at his job, the fact that we all know what his past is like. They know what his past is like.
Right.
And the fact that because he was there, that led Evil easy access for the kids, or for the Hellfire Club to get in, and Husk was part of it too, but Husk, because she wasn't in control, she's keeping her job.
She has an out.
Yeah, she has an out.
That's fine.
So I think, and this is where I personally stand, is like, I see it as a justifiable firing because of his past, and it's not just do it once, he's done it several times, he's hurt the X-Men in points, and they can't risk that again. And in fact, at the end of the issue, he joins the bad guys, mostly out of because that's what he knows. That's what's comforting, probably. So that's how I see
because
it.
Because that's what he sees as his only option.
Pretty much.
Let's see. Okay. All right. I just
your past comes to bite you in the ass is how I see it. And that, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, we know what you've done before. You were part of Magneto's Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. You nearly fucked over our school in this point, you know, or screwed over our kids in this point. We can't have this again. So with taking zero tolerance, you're fired. So it sucks for Toad, but hey, he did it for love. He didn't do it with evil intentions, but the act of doing it, sometimes, you know.
Well, this is the road to heaven. It's paved with good intentions now, is it?
Yeah, no, I just...
See, but you know what it is, though? When you think about it, who else do they have on that staff? They have Rogue, they have Phoenix, they got Wolverine.
Beast,
Rogue
Beast,
was
Iceman,
a member of the...
Beast,
what
Ice,
happened?
Beast, Iceman, Storm.
No. What? Think about who they have on that team. How many of them have had the checkered history? Okay.
No, they mentioned that.
Phoenix, Rachel Gray almost ate the planet.
Not even Bobby Drake is pure anymore. He fucked up big over in Astonishing.
Yeah, but we're talking about how big a fuck-up compared to everybody, other people's.
They acknowledge what he did. They acknowledge what he did. It's like, we gave you a second chance, but it didn't work out because of what you did. This was his second chance, as far as they were concerned. And he fucked it up. That's what they're saying.
Okay. All right.
It's like, well, this is what's like this. What Rachel says, like, but you also helped lead the team there in the first place. So he knew where they were located at. But we can't ignore the fact that you betrayed our trust and spied on the Hellfire Club for us. And you know.
So wait a minute. Did he actually try and make amends for what he had done?
No, he because he knew shit was going down, and he didn't like what the Hellfire Club was doing. He knew how to get the X-Men there. So they admire, like, yes, you helped us there. We wouldn't have gotten you out there. At the same time, you still spied on us for them. You still led them to get us here. Would the situation have happened if you weren't even putting that, if you didn't do it in the first place? So,
I just, you know what it is? I saw a few issues, and I see how Toad was being played out, and to see him get dismissed like this, you know, and I just think, you know, I have read X-Men for a long time, and I know that they've had members who have done way worse and have also gotten that chance to make amends, yet, well, you know, whoever was in charge and made the decision, they got rid of him. Yeah, okay. You know, just, all right.
Well, they felt bad. Some of them felt bad, like, well, maybe we shouldn't have. Well, like, it wasn't a unanimous decision by the most part, but they just felt like this is something we had to do. Whereas the other X-Men have reformed for the most part, Toad's fucked up before, and he continues to fuck up in terms of serving the bad guys. So there's that. And he did it out of his own. He wasn't mind controlled. He wasn't manipulated.
Right.
He knew
what
he was
doing. No, free will. No, not questioning that. So, you know, I don't blame anybody who's being controlled for something that they can't control. But, you know, free will is free will. I'm just saying. You know, we can look at the X-Men roster and see. Oh yeah, black mark, humongous black mark, still an X-Men.
Well, he wasn't an X-Men.
Quicksilver was to come back today, he'd be welcoming. You know it.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure. But again, he was never an X-Men. He was just it was just a janitor. He was never an official member of the team.
Okay, but even still though, you know, Quicksilver and Namor would get a bigger welcome back than he would.
Either way, I'm gonna be sad when I'm not reading this book anymore, because I will not be picking it up when it continues next month, just because I'm happy with this volume.
Because it doesn't sound palatable to you, because the creators are going to be the creative
team. No, because I'm reading Amazing X-Men, and I won't lie and say that this book kind of sputtered out a little bit. Like, this issue kind of recaptured that a little bit of that magic, and I've been reading Amazing X-Men, which had that, maybe not similar tone, but that same sort of magic I felt when I first started reading the book, so I'm just transitioning from this to that. That's all.
Fair.
So I'll read the next continuation in trade form, not just monthly. You know, it's just that's an easy decision. I'm sure the creators can do a fine job, but it's just like, let me I'm going to go to Amazing X-Men now. That way I get to follow Wolverine and stuff like that. So, all right. Mm. So that being said, Jonathan, you have some more British people to talk about.
Yes. This is like part three of the Revolutionary War storyline that started up about a month or two ago, and revisiting all the old Marvel UK characters. And this issue is with the Knights of the Pendragon. They were kind of like the British Avengers, so to speak, for that particular title. And it starts out rather interesting and explains how, Captain Britain's come up missing. And if you've read the previous couple issues, you kind of know he's tangling with Death's Head. The group is starting to kind of reunite, and it gives a description of each of the various people that were part of the deal. One of them is a guy who, kind of like a drunk ex-cop whose alternate personality, he's possessed by the spirit of Gawain, the Green Knight of the Round Table. So he spontaneously will turn into the, "My fair lady, I shall help," and she likes him but doesn't like the other personality. And it's kind of funny, and it gets a little funny in the issue. You see Union Jack, the British version of Captain America is what I was trying to say, is along with Pete Wisdom, who is familiar to anybody who's read Excalibur or, any of the X titles there. They are looking for a way into the mystical realm of the underworld for all of Britain's mystical energy and stuff, because they're looking for Albion, who is like another tank for the team. They get in there and they see like London all weeded out, and there's a tree that's messed up. You know, it's like the underworld's been the mystic. You know, it's representing the modern day England, where there's advertisements everywhere, skyscrapers and everything else. And the guy that they look for, who's Albion, is an old guy sitting there watching MasterChef, and they're trying to get a hold, through to him. He's like, "No, MasterChef is on. I want to see who wins the contest," and that kind of thing. So it's kind of poking fun at the current way people like to watch reality TV and stuff like that, and kind of funny to read. Then you start hearing boom and boom, all of the Simonson, Surtur routine. And everybody gets encountered by King Arthur or zombie versions of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. So it's almost like, yes, they're doing Shaun of the Dead, only with King Arthur and his knights, and with no rom-com, so to speak. And it's kind of bizarre, but and they're all starting to fight everybody, and then the guy who plays Albion comes out of nowhere, finally, like, "You've interrupted my TV," and he just starts beating the hell out of King Arthur, and everybody else starts trying to fight the undead, undead zombie knights, while also trying not to be eaten. Pete Wisdom finds Excalibur that author had dropped, and it had landed in a rock, and then he's like, "Really? I got to do this?" And he's trying to pull the sword out of the stone and trying to find what happened to England's representation of mystical power and stuff. And obviously the undead knights are fighting them, and he finally says, "You know what? Screw this." And he throws the sword at this tree that was a representation of the deal, and out pops this humongous basketball player wearing the Union Jack and, sports endorsements and stuff, and apparently is the representation of today's Britain in mystical form, and is this giant basketball player, and King Arthur looks up and gets scrunched. Dead on. Stepped on like an ant, crunched by this big giant basketball player who's like going, yeah, Mom, that kind of thing. And it just, yeah, it was kind of odd. And the player kind of looks like,
wow, that was great.
Yeah, it was kind of, but he looks like Dennis Rodman almost, minus the tattoos, but he has, like, at one point, blonde hair and stuff. And he's just kind of, they're all kind of, when they finally, at the end of the issue, they're kind of gathered around, going, okay, what's going on? And they're like, okay, I guess we need to start finding what's going on with Mystech. And it ends with the giant basketball player behind him going, yeah, you know, just, you know, I guess wanting to kick ass. And it goes, to be continued in Revolutionary War, Death's Head 2. And I will say this, I never read the Knights of the Pendragon proper back in the day, but if this title was any indication, I'm going to have to go back and look for the back issues, because this had some warped sense of humor, and it also helped that it had Pete Wisdom in there, who's always a sarcastic ass, almost like Marvel's version of Constantine in a way, only different. And it was also nice to see Union Jack, because I've been one of my favorite characters that's never been utilized properly. I'll give this one it was a good light reading, and I like how they are doing this. It's nice to see a title that is picking up on old themes, but they're not trying to be like, you know, major cosmic modeling crossover stuff. Each issue seems to be self-contained, but continues the overarching story arc, and that's how it should be. That way, if you want to pick up an individual issue, you can, and read it, and be like, okay, I might be interested in reading the other stuff, but you don't have to. And the art was fairly decent for what they were doing, and the writing was pretty good. I give it a 3.3. on the out of 5, and I'm looking forward to seeing Death's Head 2, because he's my all-time favorite of the UK characters, aside from Dark Angel.
Yes.
Which, Angel. What?
Yeah.
What?
Remind me.
I could never warm up to Death's Head. I couldn't. I can't help it.
Remind me, where do I start with this Revolutionary War stuff? What part 1 do I need to read?
What's part 1? It's Revolutionary War Alpha.
Okay.
And then it goes into Dark Angel. And then it's Knights of the Pendragon is the current issue. Tomorrow, you know, and in a couple of days, Death's Head 3 comes, or 2 comes out, and they'll have the rest of the list in the back of the issues.
Okay.
And there's going to be about 8 issues, but it's like 1 issue a week, it seems like, and it'll end with Revolutionary War Omega.
Oh, okay.
And
I'll try.
So wait for the trade.
Well, I might try the first issue out this week. It's a light week, so we'll see. I'll just be reading it.
Yeah, I liked it. Like I said, I tend to like some of the weirder stuff, and I know Taser did kind of like Dark Angel, even though
it wasn't. It was a pretty good read. I'll agree. Yeah.
And this one was pretty good. I mean, I kind of gave a light review on that, but because it was a rather light. It's kind of hard to explain. It's a bunch of British heroes fighting undead King Arthur and his knights.
That sounds awesome.
Which kind of boils down to it, and the way they take out King Arthur is hilarious.
Don't tell me.
You know, you're just like...
Don't spoil it.
I know, I'm just saying.
Okay.
But it was just hilarious. And you're just like, I can't believe they had the balls to do it that way, but it also kind of sums up how things are. You know, as a social commentary. So it's a good read. I'm looking forward to this. It's a light read, which is what I'm really enjoying right now. You know, like Superior Spider-Man has been, although not as wide as you might think. But anyway, that was my review.
Let's next go with to Miss Senor Brian. Powers, as for some reason I cannot speak with, as he goes back to the 1960s with Winter Soldier, The Bitter March, number 1.
Yes, we're going all the way back to 1966, wherein, what do you know? It turns out Nick Fury is chasing down some old Nazis. Seems to be his usual shtick, his MO, but, you know, it makes it work here. Specifically, in this issue, we find out Nick Fury is targeting a couple of former Nazi scientists who worked with Arnim Zola during World War II, Peter and Mila Hitzig. they apparently have discovered the alchemy formula, which pretty much is going to let them cover alchemical transmutations and stuff. And unfortunately, these scientists have fallen into the hands of Hydra, as it stands, of course, because, you know, it's just, it's a Nick Fury kind of book, so it usually works out that way. So Hydra has a, has these scientists under lock and key, and they're going to plan to use these use this alchemical formula to turn to give themselves an unlimited supply of different precious metals like uranium, vibranium, adamantium. They're able to make weapons out of this stuff. They're going to create gold for themselves. This is going to cause their plan is to create enough gold that they want to crash the world economy, and with each side blending to the other, so it's going to lead to a war, allegedly. So Nick Fury and another agent whose name presently escapes me at the moment, I believe it's, give me just 1 second, it's on the tip of my tongue. Where is it? There we go, Agent Shen, Rand Shen, an Asian-American agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., working with Fury. It's just these two taking on Castle Hydra at the present moment. And Agent Shan infiltrates this meeting of Hydra elite, businessmen, shock caller scientists and stuff assembled. And he starts flirting with this hot redhead. And if you read Marvel, you know redheads aren't any good, but he doesn't adhere to that simple rule. So he ends up getting in deep with this girl, trying to infiltrate to get a look at Hydra's vaults, where they might be keeping anything valuable, and trying to pry information from her under the assumption that she is inebriated. However, just as he goes in for, you know, a little French kiss in action, yeah, turns out she is a, wouldn't say a creation, but a definitely augmentation of Hydra scientist, a villain called Madame Worm, who, as we discussed, pretty much spews worms from different extremities, from her tongue especially, first and foremost. While they're kissing, she slips a few into his mouth, no pun intended. And, yeah, so he's covered with these worms that are going to allegedly open his mind to the influence of Hydra. Mind control worms, always fun. And then Fury busts in to save his ass. Now, the reason these two had separated in the first place is because they were trying to find the quickest and safest route inside, and it was a bet between the two, essentially. And so Fury comes crashing in, saving this guy, and asking how much they wagered on this bet, and the guy insists that he still won. You know, it's good-natured, classical, you know, secret agent banter happening here. So, essentially, what we get is these two rescue the scientists, and instead of going downstairs, which Fury says they should go because it's the safer route, but Shan protests saying that's predictable, they instead decide to go topside and just sort of descend from there with this sick-ass glider suit, I suppose, is built into their gear. Now, when they get topside, however, scientists are literally swept right from under them. Nick Fury and Agent Shan are both knocked the fuck out. And who else sweeps in but the Winter Soldier? Yeah, he flies right in, grabs the scientist, and is out in a flash. How they characterize it, a blur of shadow. So two agents go diving after the Winter Soldier, and they tussle in the air. They fight over the scientists. Agent Shan gets a hold of the two after Fury does a misdirect and kind of catches the Winter Soldier on his blind side. Essentially, what it comes down to is Agent Shan collects the scientists and is separated from Fury and the Winter Soldier in this wilderness in the Eastern European mountains. Fury and Winter Soldier are both kind of separated on their own out there in the wilderness somewhere. And as Agent Shan prepares to get the two scientists on their feet and moving again, the Winter Soldier also climbs back from defeat. And I kind of love the way they phrase it. The last little bit of dialogue, or inner monologue, is that, quote, "Better pray to God you're not stranded in the forest with the Winter Soldier," end quote. And so he goes marching after Agent Shan and the Nazi scientists. And so this is actually a pretty damn good read. I honestly, this book wasn't on my radar, mostly because it had slipped my mind that Remender was actually even writing the book. But when, once I picked it up and found it was Remender, I had high hopes for it, and the book did not disappoint. It was a really cool little interesting espionage jaunt written by Remender superbly, and the artist Roland Boschi. I apologize. The art actually suits the book pretty well. I quite enjoyed it. I can't recall anything this man's done before, but if this is his first kind of foray into a mainstream Marvel, I gotta say it's a strong opening. I mean, not many artists can say they get to open a book with aggressive skiing combat, which is essentially how it's described between a Hydra agent and Agent Shannon Fury. So, but I actually quite enjoyed it. I'm interested to see where the book goes from here. That being said, actually, I got nothing else, nothing negative to say, really. That about covers my thoughts on it. It for a book with such a heavy-hitter author on it, it felt like there should have been more going on, or if there wasn't a lot going on, you know? It's interesting. It felt like
the setup was almost... The setup of this was hinted, it was actually hinted in Captain America, the monthly, where you meet...
Really?
Yeah, you meet Agent Shin a lot older in the Winter Soldier. Like, you... Not older, but you flash back to Agent Shin and the Winter Soldier mission, so I'm not sure if it's the same one.
It probably hints, more than likely,
Agent Shin and his in the book, I believe he's defected from S.H.I.E.L.D. At this point,
well, in this one, he's still a true believer in working with Fury. So, that having been said, like I said, I felt like I didn't know that then, but obviously, if I'd been reading Cap, I would have probably got more from this book. But yeah, it didn't feel like there was a whole lot going on in this book, and a lot happened in this single issue. But yeah, it felt very minimalist in the sense that not a lot of relevance happened. I mean, well. There was a good amount, but a lot of the beginning is taken up with Shan flirting with this Madam Worm, so, you know, there's that.
I just think they're doing, like, James Bond-esque spy stuff from the 60s.
Essentially, yeah, and not one of the fantastic James Bonds, but probably one of the more understated ones. But I still, like I said, I still enjoyed it immensely. Remender really, he can please me no matter what he writes, but then there's also this guy. Boschi. I actually quite enjoyed his art more than I expected, and I would like to see more from him in the future. So yeah, I'll be picking up the next issue, but it was an interesting first issue. Not over the top exciting, but it definitely hooked me with intrigue as to how the story was going to play out. So, but I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5 Warriors. Like I said, the only thing that really swayed my opinion on this into any negative sense was the fact that it was very understated. It didn't feel like there was a lot going on. So hopefully the stuff will pick up, the action will pick up next issue. But for right now, I'm pretty satisfied. And so I guess I'll just leave it at that.
And now we're gonna wrap up with Taser with a combined issue of X Factors number 1 and X Factor number 2. So take it away, T-Man.
Yeah, I kind of drew the short straw on this one because I wanted to read something. I didn't want to just do something that, you know, one of the other books I'm already reading. So, you know, I was kind of looking through what was out there and what I had picked up because, you know, hey, that sounds interesting. And I saw this. So then I went, but didn't we do this? And I went back and I looked over the last couple of shows that we did and was surprised to find that nobody had touched it. So, cool, fine. Then I happened to go into one of the threads in the, you know, GLCMB and find out, West asked about this. Damn it! I drew the short straw. I have to do a book asked about by Wally West. Or as I'm going to call him from now on, Dub Dub.
Yes, you are pleasing Dub Dub's ear holes right now.
That's right.
Sensuous tones.
I just like messing with him.
Your metaphorical tongue just licking his ear.
It sounds delicious. Anyway, So, yeah, X-Factor. We got a new team. I don't know how the last team broke up. What was it? Madrox.
David ended the series. That's how they broke up.
Okay. So, anyway.
No, that's really it, though. I mean, almost through every single regime change of the last, like, 3-4 years or so, Peter David's X-Factor has always remained. So, really, I can only imagine it ended because he set that. I don't know what kind of weight that guy pulls over there, but enough that his series lasts through almost a few regime changes and, you know, status quo changes. Like Marvel Now, his book lasted through that. So, I imagine it ended just because he decided, okay, my story's done for now. And he kind of went away.
Did he write the last one?
Oh, he wrote the last one first to end.
Okay, well, and he just decided to reset everything because he's writing this one, and he's got this guy, Carmine DiGiadomenico. I have never heard of this guy before. That's done for Wes because I know Wes cares about this kind of stuff. Everything starts off in some type of laboratory where these two doctors or scientists are talking about, you know, having completed most stages of something and they're ready for the last stage, you know, the vivisection. And you know, one doctor's like eagerly looking forward, just like, oh yes, we're ready. We're finally there. And apparently the person that they will be performing said vivisection on is within earshot and is capable of responding to, you know, the current what will be happening to them, and they're not too happy. The doctor, Dr. Hoffman, sounds just a wee bit too enthusiastic about, you know, the matter, but. Yeah, this isn't the guy I'd want to have to go to for a checkup. Regardless, we move on to Gambit in the midst of, you know, doing a B&E to steal some type of statue that's got demonic thingies or whatever. And before he can actually get it, he gets interrupted by Wolverine, who just kind of walks in, turns on the lights, and, you know, ruins everything. Or so we thought. Come to find out that apparently the house of the person that Gambit had broken into, and apparently it wasn't some type of job where, ooh, it's a shiny, pretty thing. This thing was bad news. And he thought that, yeah, this needs to be gone somewhere else, or else we could have a problem at some point in the future. And I kind of support him on this. But, well, anyway, come to find out, the guy whose house he had broken into, his security system was designed by Tony Stark. You can stick Tony Stark's name on anything, and automatically it's super. And even though Gambit was able to get as far as he got, it still picked Gambit up and sent out a call, and it got to Tony Stark. Tony Stark sent the call over to Wolverine. Wolverine flew the Blackbird and landed and, you know, stopped him in the midst of. Yeah. So Wolverine then proceeds to start dressing Gambit down, even though Gambit, you know, explains to him what's going on. You know, Wolverine's kind of like, and you need to act like an adult. I mean, they went old man Wolverine kind of. You know, he's there talking to him about being proper and acting like an adult and everything else like that. And, you know, I am not a fan of Marvel Now Wolverine. I swear to you. I am so not a fan of this guy. You know? Gambit heads over to this bar and he's, you know, kind of trying to calm down. And he ends up getting into a fight with a bunch of guys over Katrina, of all things. Yeah, it's. So anybody else want to say that New Orleans had Katrina coming because of its ungodly beliefs? Yeah, it was that kind of a fight. And of course, you know, it wouldn't have been a long one, and of course Gambit won it. But during the midst of him trying to finish his drink and everybody else walking on eggshells, Polaris shows up. And they kind of, you know, they have a quick talk, and he asked her, is everything okay? Because I kind of heard that you had a bit of a thing, a thingy thing. And she's like, it was a very bad day. Let's get out of here. So they split and they go to a Starbucks. Because, you know, Starbucks. And she talks about her new gig and how Gambit himself is, well, Gambit was kind of given, like, you know, the line, you know, by Wolverine. If he wants to stay in with the good kids, that, you know, the thieving sidelines are done. And he was a guy who ran X-Force, and he's having a problem with a thief, okay? He's got to, and because he's also running the Thieves Guild now, he's got to cancel all of that and walk on a straight and narrow and blah, 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 blah. You know,
I love how Wolverine's other mutant ability is apparently a holier-than-thou attitude.
Yes, exactly, which is why I absolutely hate Marvel Now Wolverine. I do not like this guy. So Polaris, you know, makes him a pitch since, you know, Gambit is easily not happy with you know, what's going on back at Casa del Wolverine. And she tells him, well, she can roll with him. And, you know, he's speculative about it, but he decides to jump in. And here we actually get to see the first, well, for me, the first real bit of anything regarding Serval Industries. You know, that company that was in the trailer for First Class, the new First Class movie, and they've shown up here and there in the Marvel Universe, like a billboard here, you know, maybe a sign there. I've seen it actually in a few books. Here, Polaris is apparently working for that corporation, and they, you know, they're apparently very, 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 very well to do, so much so that the planet they're in has a missile fired at it. Because
Neato.
Yeah. And when we're talking, it's a passenger jet. Somebody fires a missile at it. Well, Polaris does her thing, and, you know, it's no big deal. They land in their headquarters. They get to the headquarters, and he meets the guy in charge. And, you know, the guy gives him, Harrison Snow. So Harrison Snow, you know, he kind of gives him a pitch, and basically he tells him that, you know, they're a company set up to, you know, basically help people. Even though, yes, we do have our fingers in, you know, a couple of different industries, one of which also happens to be weapons development and what have you. But the main work is helping people. And that's apparently what sold Polaris on working with them. And I assume that, I think Wolverine had gotten in touch with her. But either way, she decided that, yeah, I could bring in some other people who might be amenable towards this. That's why she picked up Gambit. Gambit acts kind of like he might have heard of him, you know. And, well, you would think that because the man's rich, that, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But Gambit seems like, no, I haven't heard of you before. But, you know, he doesn't really get much further than that. The guy makes, you know, makes a pitch towards him. And he also makes mention of them also having an Avenger that, you know, might join the team. And Polaris says, huh, what? An Avenger? And guess who shows up?
Oh, gosh. Who could it be?
Her half-brother, Pietro. And apparently, the dust-up that Gambit had mentioned and Polaris had kind of wanted to dodge talking about had to do with him. They don't get into a whole lot of detail, but they had some issues, and apparently, you know, there's still some ruffled feathers or whatever, but, you know, she decides that she can take and leave things be, whatever, you know. So, okay, fine. So Pietro's on board because, and Gambit because it's something to do. And they hop in a jet and they fly over. Where did they go? Actually, they don't actually say. You know, they're flying. They're flying somewhere. But they're flying to some place to rescue a person. It's actually a rescue mission, you know. The place is a another type of industrial whatever, and Dr. Hoffman, he's come under the employ of a rather secret organization. We're not sure which one, although we're thinking it may be a research division of Advanced Idea Mechanics. Ooh. Aim.
Ooh.
So, yeah, you know, we see the guys with the funny hats. And, hey, do you hear something? Crash. Zip. Freaking Quicksilver with the, hey, that was fast. Him and Gambit, they do the big break-in. And it's like, ooh, nice, flashy. And Gambit's now wearing the Serval Industries new X-Factor costume, which actually isn't bad. It's a whole lot of yellow. It's very strange. It's like yellow and I guess maybe some gray and black lines. It's different. And they got goggles. The goggles are the strangest part. You know, I really don't get that. But whatever, it's different. And they're here to get in and, you know, rescue whoever it is that needs rescuing as Dr. Hoffman is in the midst of performing his section. And they get to the room where, you know, he's doing whatever. And you come to correction. They're making their way through, and somebody comes into the room where he's about to do whatever. And it turns out that his patient was Fatal. Okay, I don't know this mutant, but apparently she's a mutant of some known. And he's about to cut into her. And Dr. Hoffman is looking very, very, very forward to them showing up because more subjects. Yes, tasty mutants. So that was the end. That was how issue one ended. Issue two begins. Oh, hello. Okay, there we go. With Dr. Hoffman getting to a control room, and he's apparently got two other mutants. Apparently, Fatal had some partners with her, and we find out that somehow or other, and I don't know how this happened, but Quicksilver had given Fatal and her two compatriots abilities, but it also kind of screwed them up. So they had to get dumped in, I think it was like the negative zone or something, to keep them from blowing up and dying. And Dr. Hoffman, however it happened, discovered their existence, pulled them over, and did something to them that kept them from dying, but also kept them captive. So Polaris and Gambit and Quicksilver, they get caught up in a couple of, death traps, because why not? Death traps. Quicksilver makes short work of his. Gambit gets out of his. And Polaris, I don't know, Polaris kind of goes girly, but okay, fine, whatever. Either way, they all get out of him. And Gambit and Quicksilver again have a nice little 2-on-30 fight, which doesn't last long. the two mutants who had also been captured, you know, they're privy to Dr. Hoffman and him absorbing whatever the hell it was that Quicksilver did to these three. And he turns into some big energy being, for lack of a better term, who apparently thinks he knows how to use power because he's intelligent and mutants are stupid. You know, they don't understand what it is that they have at their fingertips. Yeah. Okay. You know, I kind of can't help but think, but, you know, you use technology to take the energy from these people. So, you know, it's not like you're doing this out of your own ability, but whatever. So you have basically big energy guy tearing shit up. What are we going to do? I don't know. We got to do this. We got to do that. And, you know, it's the typical dodge this, dodge that, things explode. it ends up getting resolved with a nice, I guess you'd say, combo move with Quicksilver and Gambit. Because, of course, it had to be Quicksilver and Gambit. By running up to his ear, tossing a charged card inside his ear canal, running away, it goes off inside his ear canal, and then he shrinks down. Problem solved. Yeah, I mean, really, that was it. Apparently, he had to be conscious to control the energy. Unconscious, hey, he's just normal guy. So, yeah. So as he's lying there, one of these guys, I don't remember, he picks up this piece of rubble, and he's about to smash the man's head in. Personally, I don't really have a problem with that, considering how long they apparently have been kept and what he was going to do to all of them. Yeah, I could walk away cool and not give a rat's ass that they killed this man. My morals are fine. But Lorne is upset, therefore Quicksilver steps in to save the man's life. And I mean, you know, that's kind of it. You know, Fatal, you know, kind of pitches a bitch. You know, how dare you deny me of this, that, whatever that. And, you know, how dare you also have Quicksilver with you, because he ends up saving us. And, you know, that's like, you know, kind of add insult to injury. So her and the other two guys, you know, they decide to beat feet. And, I mean, really, that's the end of the book. You know, they kicked ass and, yeah. I don't know. This issue end was somewhat abrupt. You know, they wanted to get to this fight and I guess kind of set up the something of the status quo. You know, we got to see the costumes and everything. It wasn't a bad book. It moved along. It was very kinetic. I don't know. It wasn't too substantial, you know, and unfortunately on my end, I kind of needed to know a little bit, you know, well, there's bad blood between a couple of the characters involved here, and I have no idea what that, you know, mostly what that was aside from the little bit of info we're given. So Fatal acting the way that she did, you know, I can only just kind of sit here and go, oh, okay, yeah, she has a problem with him. But, you know, it means absolutely nothing to me. And, you know, because they don't actually get back to, you know, SI proper, you know, there's no, they've come back. I wonder if they knew anything about what our real reasons were for sending them to that. You know, there's none of that. So it's kind of like, I don't know. It's like a lot of Kung Fu movies, actually, where they just kind of end. You know, there's no follow-up or whatever. It's just kind of bad guy done and the story. Jeez. I guess if I had to put the two of them together, it's okay. This issue by itself is really abrupt. It's an interesting start for a new run. To be fair, I guess I would probably have to give this not a 3. 3 doesn't feel right. I guess I'd have to give it maybe a 2.75. Yeah, a 2.75 sounds right for this. I wouldn't dissuade anybody from reading it, but I can't really promote it just yet.
Well, then, there you go. New directions are always fun. At least in some cases, they should be fun. So let's end on this on the possibly a negative note for Taser. Real quick, guys, it was just announced or a while ago that the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer will premiere tomorrow night on Jimmy Kimmel, which I love Jimmy Kimmel. He needs all the love in the world.
Fuck Jimmy Kimmel.
Fuck Jimmy Fallon.
No, thank you. I'd rather.
Hey, don't be dissing Jimmy Fallon.
Fallon isn't funny. Jimmy Kimmel is legit.
Kimmel isn't funny.
Fallon isn't funny.
No, Kimmel isn't funny.
No, Fallon. Okay, this can go on for 20 minutes. But seriously, Jimmy Fallon sucks.
No, Jimmy Kimmel sucks.
Jimmy Kimmel should replace Jay Leno on the Tonight Show. That's how I would have
it. Oh, my God. That's the worst idea ever.
We accept it. We reject it. We accept it.
Duck season.
That's no Popeye joke.
I was gonna
Coke, Pepsi.
Duck season.
Rabbit season.
Duck season.
Rabbit season.
Okay, rabbit season.
Bam. Duck season.
Elmer Fudd.
Can we just get to what you were saying, Ben?
Red, blue.
So, let's expectations tomorrow night. We've seen some screenshots of their plane flying over the homeworld of the Nova Corps. We've seen gangster style walking of the Guardians of the Galaxy featuring Zoe Sandala, Rocket Raccoon, what's the guy's name? The main character? The character, not
Star-Lord?
Star-Lord, Groot, and Drax the Destroyer, played by Dave Bautista. So yeah, I am very curious. If I had to sum it up in one word, I know we saw a leak trailer, but you couldn't really see shit, so I'm not going to judge it based on that. And we've seen the GIF running around of Rocket Raccoon shooting the machine gun off of Groot's shoulders. But this is going to be a surreal one to watch. When I finish the trailer tomorrow night, I'll be at work, but fuck it, I'm going to watch it either way.
Jump on YouTube like around midnight, I'll be on.
It'll be on when I'm on my way home, and I'll watch it on the bus via Wi-Fi. Or be home when I get home. So, either way. Anyways, it's going to be weird because this is the biggest departure that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has made so far. You know, Thor was a pretty big stretch, but people seem to love Thor, you know. God, aliens and space and stuff like that. So, gods and whatever. So, but
no, aliens.
But this is going to be the strange aliens and different, you know, things. So, and they have, and it's going to be interesting to see how it's in this probably 2-minute max trailer of showing the weird side of the Marvel Universe, that there is more to this cinematic universe than just New York City and Asgard. There is a whole nother plethora of stuff. And I know I will not condemn the movie based on that trailer. Or nor will I say this movie is going to be the best thing ever. It's either going to get me really excited or stem my excitement a little bit. It's under either or. I'm expecting starting now until August, until August when the movie comes out, that we will be showered with Guardians of the Galaxy, so similar to how we've had of Captain America and Spider-Man and X-Men.
Right.
So... it's early. I mean, it's only February. They still got a long time. I'm pretty sure now they're going to start promoting it. If they didn't show a trailer till June, then I'd be worried. Because then you know they know that the movie sucks. But the fact that they're showing a trailer now means they want to start building the hype train. Okay, fair enough. Let's do this. Okay.
Snore.
That's it.
Snore!
So what happens if you like the trailer tomorrow night? What are you going to do?
I think we'll probably get more of a teaser than a trailer. If whatever we get, whatever it is, if whatever we get happens to come along and I like it, I will give it the praise it deserves. I'm not, I don't talk outside of my ass, and I don't hate just to hate. I honestly have not seen anything to make me excited for this movie from the jump. You know, which is why I don't expect much, but I will give it a fair chance. You know, I want to see other things from Marvel other than, hey, look, another Spider-Man, another X-Men, another Iron Man, you know, Avengers 7, you know. Yeah, I want to see that diversity. But I haven't made it a secret that I'm also, A, not a fan of this version of Guardians of the Galaxy, and B, not being too impressed by what they have planned for the movie. You know, I mean, that's two heavy strikes right there. So, you know, I'm up front. I'm up front with the hate, you know, but my hate is legit. If it's something that's thumbs up worthy, all well and good. But if it's not, I will burn it to the best of my ability orally.
Brian?
I don't know if it speaks to how excited I am that I'm listening to Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Suede right now, but I'm pretty amped for it, you know? Like all of y'all, I am growing eager for something else, something, a departure from the what's come to be sort of the Marvel standard of New York and Trouble, you know, and occasionally go to Asgard, but for the most part, it stays on Earth. And that being said, there's so much more to Marvel that you can dig out of just the back bins. It's just, you're barely scratching the surface by touching on Guardians, but that is an argument for another day, I suppose. I guess what I'm trying to say here is that I'm pretty fucking amped for this new trailer to drop. I mean, the leaked trailer itself, I was kind of hoping that, I don't know if that's ever been released, like, professionally cut or edited or anything like that. Yeah.
It was just a sneak peek for some people.
Yeah. What I would love if Marvel releases that as the new trailer just to fuck with the fans. That would fucking piss me off. But I'm looking forward to new footage, new material, and I'm very, very excited to hopefully finally hear some of Groot or Rocket Raccoon, or just hear anyone speak, really, because there hasn't been the only dialogue we've heard so far is really from John C. Reilly and that guy who calls the Guardians a bunch of assholes. What a bunch of assholes. And so I'm looking forward to hearing something, you know, hopefully getting clues to the greater plot, because there wasn't a whole lot of that in the rough trailer. But I am very excited. I mean, I'm of two minds. This can either go super serious space opera, which, given the first trailer, I don't think it will, or other, I guess. I don't really know how to characterize that yet, but I'm sure I'll find a nice way of saying it.
We do have a vague idea that it's going to involve the ending of Thor the Dark World, where Sif and, what's his name? Volstagg drop off the ether. Was it the ether? Yeah, the ether.
It was the stuff.
Yeah. Which they called it an Infinity Stone to the Collector, and we know the Collector's in this movie, so that has to factor in somehow. And we all know Stone Infinity means one man and one man only.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out, but we won't know that till August. I doubt we get a shot of Thanos tomorrow, though, that's for sure. I doubt we see that.
Oh, no, they're keeping that card close to the vest, if anything else.
Although it's weird that they tease him at the end of Avengers 1 and we won't see him till Avengers 3. That's the interesting part is, but whatever. Ultron will suffice.
Yeah, and we'll just have to make do with the killer robot, I guess.
He's not a killer robot. He's an artificial intelligence bent on destroying the world. He's not just one robot.
Which is just a fancy way of saying killer robot.
No, because killer robot implies he has one body. AI, artificial intelligence, you cannot kill an artificial intelligence.
Sure you can.
And how come Ultron isn't dead yet?
Because it's a comic book, and nobody dies in comics.
How come the Terminators haven't been stopped yet, asshole?
Because they haven't written into the franchise yet, asshole.
Asshole. Hoppa.
Fuck Kimmel, he's not funny.
Hoppa.
Fuck you.
Fuck you. Hoppa.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Hey, fuck you.
Fuck the Sox. By the way, Jeter's retiring. Sad.
Yay!
Retired.
Yay!
Woo-hoo!
Yay!
Fucking Jeter.
He was mad because he didn't score as many women as he did in his lifetime.
Dude, the number of women Jeter has laid is just...
Well, he deserves it. And we're going to wrap it up on there, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see y'all. Please tune in for next week, because I know I'm anxious to hear everybody's reactions to Guardians of the Galaxy trailer when it launches tomorrow night. So be sure.
But if you are hanging out on our message board, www.greenlanterncorps.com, you can see our reactions earlier.
Oh, I won't be saying it until the show starts, so you'll have to wait.
Seriously?
Oh, I'm keeping it exclusive, baby.
I'm not.
But in the meantime, please come check out my personal blog that I do, marvelousiggy.wordpress.com, where last week, just to give you a hint of what I did, I talked about the Oklahoma State controversy involving Michael Smart. I did a mini review on the Ultimates number one, and then I talked about one of my favorite games from the Sega Saturn and two of the first levels in the game, Nights into Dream, with the first two levels there. So if you want to look about those, check those out if you remember the Sega Saturn and wish it had a longer life cycle than it did. Whatever.
What?
Until then,
folks. Motherfucker, man.
Until then, see y'all next week for episode number one for the next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye!
Johnny V, you better show up next week!